Let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, get our view from the middle. He is the fine sports journalist for USA Today. You can find his work in the red section of the paper, online, usatoday.com. Keep up on Twitter. The handle is at George Schroeder. George Schroeder, a very good Wednesday to you, sir. How are things?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
All righty. I wanted to make sure we're connected. I'm out. They let me out of the coop, so I'm live on location. So
I was watching one of these signing ceremonies on Twitter, trying to keep up. You know how it is on National Signing Day.
Yeah, well, what it was, but you know, something unique came up. I was out over the weekend, and the SEC Network was on, and they were showing highlights of Arkansas basketball from the Nolan Richardson era. And my buddy brought up your name. He's like, George is from Arkansas, and we were trying to do the math. Were you living or working in Arkansas at that time, from about, I guess, 90 to 95? And I'm just kind of curious about how captivated the fans were by those really fun teams.
Yeah, well, first of all, I grew up an Arkansas fan. I mean, I think a lot of guys maybe know that about me.
Right.
I grew up in Little Rock, and so I was a football fan first, and then Eddie Sutton came along and turned Arkansas basketball into a thing. And then Noel Richardson came along after Eddie Sutton and took them even higher there for a period of time. So in the mid-90s, I had started my career, but Arkansas basketball had clearly captivated the state. There's no question. And when they moved from the Southwest Conference into the SEC, they immediately sort of became the foil to Kentucky for a long while there. And, it's amazing to watch Arkansas basketball now and realize how far they've fallen from that time. You know, but they were never really a blue blood. They were just sort of a program that had a really nice run.
No, Corliss Williamson, Scotty Thurman, I love those teams. They were actually here in 1990 with Day Mayberry and the big guy, Oliver Miller. But like I said, your name surfaced, and so we were talking about you this weekend, George. You know, when they say you're paranoid, you think people are talking about you. We actually were. Continuing with George Schroeder.
Listen, I always assume you are talking about me, and that it's not necessarily good.
Well, this time it was good. So
I saw you on
Twitter mention this situation at Southern Miss. Hobson, their head coach, interviewed Art Briles. There was huge backlash, and now it's dead in the water. And you hear people talking about second chances. But when you think about the allegations and the pending litigation, he was up for a CFL job. Any logic to he needs to kind of stop for a while until there's some kind of closure at Baylor as far as trying to land another job?
Well, I mean, I guess stop for a while is one piece of it. The other piece of it is this. I think regardless of the time frame, whatever length of time you think is appropriate, before he gets another job, at least in a college or a high school-type setting, and I don't think a high school-type setting is probably what he's going after, but at least in a college setting, I think there's a bunch of questions that he needs to answer to people's satisfaction, and not necessarily to yours or to mine, but there's some public answers that need to be given. And at that point, then maybe there could be some closure. But otherwise, I'm not sure time is the biggest thing. So how did you handle this?
Sense.
Why did you handle it this way? You know, how do you answer these sort of allegations that you allowed this sort of culture to run, to happen on your program? He might disagree that that's what happened, but I think there's some very specific questions and answers that are, I'm sure, uncomfortable. Maybe he actually has the answers for him, but we haven't heard him. And
no,
until then, to me, he's unhireable until then.
Yeah, I think everybody needs
that,
to take.
Maybe after that, too. But I'm just saying, at least we have to begin to hear those things first.
No, I agree with you. So I want to get to Super Sunday. More Patriots. Lots of folks saying it was boring. I enjoyed it. It was a one-score game until late. I think, Seattle 43, Denver 8 was actually the real boring. But so from George's chair, was it a dud, or did you find anything compelling about the game?
Oh, well, I mean, it wasn't a blowout, and it was a one-score game. But the problem is, it was essentially a two-score game total. for a long time, right? And they were both field goals. So that's not really what you're looking for. I'd love to see a 35-31 one-score game going into, you know, late into the game or that kind of thing. So I think that's why people thought it was a dud. I didn't think it was a dud. I do like offense. I do like the way the college game has sort of infused itself into the NFL. But it's hard to disagree with the idea that a very competitive game where one play at any point can completely change the complexion of the game is a bad game. It's hard to really get upset about that. Now, I do think this, and you know this better than anybody, the Super Bowl is that one game of the year where not just casual fans watch, but people who aren't fans at all watch. And I don't know how much they actually watch at their Super Bowl parties, but they're watching. And if there are no scores at all, I mean, then that to me turns into what people determine is a boring game, right? Whereas if you place that in the middle of the season, where basically the actual real devoted fans are watching, but none of those non-fans are watching, you'd go, all right, maybe I like offense more than anything else, but that was a really good, tough football game, and it went down to the last seconds or the last minutes. So to me, yeah, you have to factor in what the audience for a Super Bowl is into why the perception is what it was.
Yeah, that's a good point. And also, I think, you know, New England holding that offense to 3 points. I mean, there was one other team that scored 3 points in Super Bowl history. You got to go back to the 1971 Dolphins, who only averaged about 20 points a game. So just a football analyst in you, how do you not have an appreciation for one of the greatest defensive performances in the history of that championship game?
Yeah, and really both defenses played well, but there's no question that Bill Belichick basically owned McVay, and they did some things that really bothered, you know, a really good up and coming quarterback in Jared Goff. And I think you have to appreciate that, regardless of what you think about the Patriots, regardless of what you think about Bill Belichick. You've got to respect what he does all the time, but what he did in that specific game planning situation was masterful.
Yeah, I agree, and it's painful to admit. So once upon a time,
yeah, I didn't enjoy it either. I have to admit it.
Yeah, you know, once upon a time, we'd be doing a big recruiting show today, and we'd have a list of 22 or 23 new ducks. We'd be dominating the sports airwaves. But with this new December signing period, is it safe to say, I think you either wrote it or tweeted it, today is kind of more now a supplement to this whole process.
Well, it is, and I don't know if this will stick because we all come up with our own deals. But you know, it used to be National Signing Day, the first Wednesday in February, kind of an unofficial holiday for a lot of people around the country. Certainly, certain areas of the country, and Oregon fans are rabid enough that it was clearly that way for them too. And now, the December signing date has become that, obviously, and it's sort of smack in the middle of a bunch of other stuff, the mid-December signing date, and so it doesn't have the same buzz to it. And then today doesn't have the same buzz because you're basically cleaning up after signing 80 or 90% of your class. You're cleaning up with some tying up some loose ends. All that said, so I'm calling it the supplemental signing day. I don't know if anybody will ever call it that, but it's not what it used to be. All that said, if you are a fan of a team, it's still, I think, a pretty big day. It's when you finalize the class. And obviously for Oregon to finalize what I guess by the numbers is the best ranking in school history. You could tell me if I'm wrong on that, but more than just the numbers, the actual people they signed, you have to be really, really excited about what that might mean for the future, and maybe even potentially the immediate future in the case of some of these guys. What a tremendous day, and there ought to be a big buzz around Eugene.
There is. Like I said, we're just getting started here, and they had a big luncheon and everything. But, you know, as wired in as you are, I wanted to close with this history of that championship game.
Yeah, and really both defenses played well, but there's no question that Bill Belichick basically owned McVay, and they did some things that really bothered, you know, a really good up and coming quarterback in Jared Goff. And I think you have to appreciate that, regardless of what you think about the Patriots, regardless of what you think about Bill Belichick. You've got to respect what he does all the time, but what he did in that specific game planning situation was masterful.
Yeah, I agree, and it's painful to admit. So once upon a time,
we enjoyed it either. I have to admit it.
Yeah, you know, once upon a time, we'd be doing a big recruiting show today, and we'd have a list of 22 or 23 new Ducks. We'd be dominating the sports airwaves. But with this new December signing period, is it safe to say, I think you either wrote it or tweeted it, today is kind of more now a supplement to this whole process.
Well, it is. It is. And I don't know if this will stick because we all come up with our own deals. But, you know, it used to be National Signing Day, the first Wednesday in February, kind of an unofficial holiday for a lot of people around the country, certainly certain areas of the country. And Oregon fans are rabid enough that it was clearly that way for them, too. And now the December signing date has become that, obviously. And it's sort of smack in the middle of a bunch of other stuff, the mid-December signing date. And so it doesn't have the same buzz to it. And then today doesn't have the same buzz because you're basically cleaning up after signing 80 or 90% of your class. You're cleaning up with some tying up some loose ends. All that said, so I'm calling it the supplemental signing day. I don't know if anybody will ever call it that, but it's not what it used to be. All that said, if you are a fan of a team, it's still, I think, a pretty big day. It's when you finalize the class. And obviously for Oregon to finalize what I guess by the numbers is the best ranking in school history, you could tell me if I'm wrong on that, but more than just the numbers, the actual people they signed, you have to be really, really excited about what that might mean for the future and maybe even potentially the immediate future in the case of some of these guys. What a tremendous day, and there ought to be a big buzz around Eugene.
There is. We're, you know, like I said, we're just getting started here, and they had a big luncheon and everything. But, you know, as wired in as you are, I want to close with this. I think I read that like 88 of the top 100 players had signed. So from the folks you're hearing from, it seems, well, I'd be accurate in saying, while it's not the splash it was, you know, the diehard college football fans and the major programs, there's still some drama and opportunity out there today with some of these players coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, I was talking with somebody else on a different radio program. Occasionally I do that, but and I'm sorry, I don't mean to be like stepping out on you, but I was talking with somebody else on a different program, and while I think that the intensity, clearly the volume of signing day has reduced because everybody signed in December, I think the intensity, especially among sort of these big programs that are fighting over these last remaining highly ranked recruits, the intensity of those might, of the can we flip you, might be bigger than it was before because there are fewer of them and they can concentrate solely on them for not just today and not just yesterday, but the week leading up to it because they're not trying to hang on to the rest of their class. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. That's a great take.
Well,
and
good.
I'm
always glad to have a good take because it happens so rarely, but I think the vibe for signing day has gone down, but I think the intensity of the few remaining, you know, five stars or whatever, intensity of the battle for them might well have increased, and we started to see that today.
Awesome. George, listen, I appreciate you being flexible time-wise. Folks know they can keep up with him, USAtoday.com on Twitter, at George Schroeder. Best of luck, and we appreciate your time, as always, getting us rolling on a Wednesday, George. Thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you, man. Take care.
All right, take it easy.